we are looking at scripture today. It's kind of a little longer passage that we're going to read. We would invite you, especially if you have your Bible with you, to just turn to Luke chapter 15, and we're going to read verses 11 through 31 today. I know it's a little longer than we normally read on a Sunday morning, but I think they're really, really good effects. So if you just kind of hold your finger there, we want to talk about that. That is an interesting chapter. Jesus tells three stories about losing something. And so the third story is the one that we are looking at today. Now, the story that we're going to engage today, you probably know as the prodigal son, okay? And it's one of two, in my opinion, one of two stories that Jesus shares in the Gospels that absolutely can transform us, that changes our thinking and our whole orientation to life and to other people in particular. It may not just hit you, you know. I don't want to set your expectations so high today that, you know, we can't reach that. But I just would encourage you to read this on your own and reread it and reread it and reread it. Because until it impacts you, until you really get what Jesus is trying to illustrate for us, and that is, what does God's grace look like? The last three Sundays, we have been talking about God's grace. And I have come to the conclusion that in a practical way, grace is understood easier by most of us when we see it in action as opposed to just an explanation of God's grace. Instead of just information about what God's grace is, to actually see it happen and to identify it in action, I think is a great way for us to absorb what grace is all about. It's easier, I think, to emulate grace than to make it work purely from a theoretical standpoint. And when we see how grace works, when we see how somebody navigates that in a really profound way, it impacts us as well. I think one of the great ways to teach and to train is not only have classroom situation where you learn the information, you know, but whatever field or calling that you're in, you know, you learn the information. But a lot of careers, you know, start and you begin to shadow a more experienced person. If you are in the medical field at all, there's a time where you shadow the person who is a veteran, somebody who has worked that job, and you know, it will not only reaffirm the things that you learned in a classroom and from a book, but I think also how those things are administered and how you deal with the people side of a career, especially like in medical or maybe in a police force or something like that. You pick up little nuances of how to take everything that you learn and to help other people with it. And I think watching Jesus and listening to these stories, we get that picture a little better. And that is why in the Gospels, the stories of Jesus and the stories that Jesus told us are so important to us, because they flesh out what grace is and what it does and what it looks like in the person of Jesus. And the story that we will address today is, as I said, one of two stories that can be, I think, transformative to us. It can change the way that we think about living out this faith, this thing we call Christianity, how we can live that out better. Now, I know we probably have a lot of information about Christianity, but how do we live it out? How do we engage other people through the lens of what our faith stands for? And, you know, the other story, if you're taking notes, you just might want to, I see linking these two stories is just absolutely important for us is the story that is included in John chapter 8. And that is where Jesus is in kind of the marketplace. And a woman who was being accused of adultery, having a sexual relationship with a man she was not married to. She's thrown into the midst of where this circle of people are, and they are accusing her, and they say the law of Moses, the Old Testament, the Levitical law, if you will, demands that such a person would be stoned. What do you say, Jesus? And if you're familiar with the story, Jesus does this incredible thing of exposing us to what grace is all about. And we'll leave that for another time, talking about that. But what we'll look at today is the story of the prodigal son. Now, one of the things that I think I've, call me slow, but I can learn. But I have taken to the habit of when I encounter a word, and maybe a word I have used in sentences, maybe in a word I have used in sermons, maybe a word I've used in conversation for a long time, maybe all my life, and yet I discover that I can't provide a definition for the word. I just know how to use it. You understand that dynamic? You know where it fits in? But it's not a word I can actually give you a definition for. Well, one of the things I've learned to do finally, especially in this age of convenience, having a smartphone, is just to Google that word and find a definition. Find, you know, the definition for that word. Now, that one of those words is the word prodigal, okay? Now, we get the idea. We know how to use the word prodigal, except it's probably a very narrow definition for us. You know, we always use it in conjunction with the prodigal son. There you go, yes. Prodigal son, they kind of go together. But what does the word prodigal actually mean? And so I looked it up. It's a fascinating word. I found out that it really has two meanings, kind of one of a more negative meaning, which is probably the one we associate with the use of the word more often, but it also has a very positive meaning. And when we understand the two meanings of the word prodigal, we find out that there is more than one prodigal in the story. In fact, if you will, there are three prodigals in the story, okay? I hope that piques your interest. But we'll take a look at this. You know, we think of the prodigal son, of course, the one who gets the inheritance, and we'll read about that in a moment, and just, you know, wastes it and finds himself destitute. But there are two other prodigals in the story. And so we'll just maybe look at the two definitions here. Now, the negative meaning of the word prodigal is this: spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully extravagant, okay? So spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully extravagant. All right. Now here's the positive meaning of the word. Having or giving something on a lavish scale. Having or giving something on a lavish scale. So, the reason I chose the story for today as opposed to the story that comes out of John chapter 8 is because it so relates to the story that we told last year, at least in one aspect of this story that we're going to cover. Now, last year, last Sunday, wasn't that long ago, it was just last Sunday, in the story that Jesus told about the vineyard owner who hired workers throughout the day, if you remember that story. And he agreed, had a contract, if you will, with workers that started at the beginning of the workday, and they agreed for a denarius, and they worked all day. And then he went out three more times in the day and hired each part later than the group before, until there was just one group, the last group, the fourth group, that the vineyard owner hired, and they only were able to work 1 hour, 1 hour in the day. And when it came to paying everybody, started with the workers that came last, they worked 1 hour, and they received the full day's wage, the denarius that was promised to the earliest workers. And they received a denarius, and the second to last group received the same, and the third to last. And so the first workers were assuming, okay, we worked way longer than everybody else, so we're going to get more money. And they were greatly disappointed when the vineyard owner gave to them a denarius, something they agreed on. And their complaint basically is, that's not fair. It's not fair. We worked longer, we bore the heat of the day, and basically we deserve more. And the vineyard owner said, did we not agree for a denarius? Are you envious? Is your eye evil? Is the phrase. Because I'm good, and can I not do what I want with my money? Did we not agree on the day's wage? Take your wage and go your way. So the story that we're going to relate today, in one aspect of the story, very much relates to that story. They're linked, and we'll see that in just a moment. So we're going to identify the one player in the story who demonstrates prodigality in a very positive way. So Luke chapter 15, you've been holding your finger there, open it up. We're going to read verses 11 through 31, so this will take a little bit longer. Then he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. Okay, to them. Notice the plural there. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. Key verse, verse 17, when he came to himself. I love that phrase. It's like all of a sudden just woke up. What am I doing here? How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his older son was in the field. And as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come. Because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, "Lo, these many years I have been serving you. I never transgressed your commandment at any time. And yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him." And he said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." Isn't that an incredible story? Well, I think it's just important to ask a couple of questions. Who are you in the story? Who are you in the story? Many have lived the prodigal life of sin, spending our youth and virtue recklessly and finding some bondage, perhaps, some brokenness, ruin, and poverty, not just economically, but of our spirit and soul as well. And somewhere along the line, maybe we wake up eating with the swine before we turn our lives back to God. Some of us relate to that. Some of us, probably I fall on this side of the story more often, maybe never have lived the messy life that side of prodigality, if you will, pretty much live a kind of a straight arrow sort of life. I can relate to that, elder brother. It's like, not perfect, not claiming perfection. But, you know, lived a fairly careful life, tried to make my parents proud, gone to church, tried to be a good Christian. Instead of sharing the grace that others have received, you know, we missed that somewhere. We expect of others to kind of live up to our standard. And maybe we wasted God's grace in an entirely different manner. It was all available, and we wasted the moment. We wasted the opportunity. We wasted the joy we could have experienced because we're looking down our nose at other people. Disgusted with their behavior, disgusted with their choices and the mess that they made out of themselves and for other people. You know, maybe we err on the side of legalism and self-righteousness and we totally miss the beauty of grace. Life is hard, less full of joy, and it separates us from the people who need to see grace up close, and we hold them at arm's length. Do you see the two kinds of prodigality? The two prodigals here, the two sons, one was a prodigal far from home and one was a prodigal at home. Both living outside the realm of the Father's grace. Grace isn't so much an experience of proximity. You can live far away and not experience the Father's grace. You can live where he lives and still miss it. Angry, bitter, mean. There's two prodigals here. Both sons are far from home. Maybe not both of them in body, but certainly in spirit. Sometimes, and I've seen this happen, is the younger son, if you will, becomes the older son. Maybe they come into this radical, transforming experience of God's grace, and you know, the mess of a life that they created for themselves is transformed into something that looks entirely different. And yet somehow even that experience where God's grace has met them, they now expect others, if they don't live up to their own example, they also kind of miss grace on the other side, if you will. Instead of sharing the grace that they receive, they now require others who shared in their errors to live and pull themselves up from the depths, and they have no patience for them. So there are prodigals. Prodigals abound. We waste it, we spend it, we withhold it even from ourselves. But then there's the father. He's the third prodigal in the story. I don't know if you picked that up already, that idea. What is he prodigal with? Well, I think he fits into that second definition, is having or giving lavishly. Giving out his love on a lavish scale, having every right to be offended, having every right, if you will, to be unforgiving, having every right to be self-righteous, having every right to be harsh, having every right to be withholding. Having every right to be those things. And yet he is gracious. He is generous. He is forgiving. He is bracing. And he's full of joy. Who are you in the story? These incredible stories that Jesus told. Who are you? Are you that messy one? Are you that legalistic one? Have you experienced God's grace that would put you in that third category of prodigality, where we are just happy when someone comes home? What would it take? We see the way the grace is displayed in this story. What would it take? What would it take for us to be that father prodigal? What would it take to live out grace like the father in the story? You know, we've all experienced the Father's grace in our lives. But we'll also share it, or will we wait for others to earn it? You know, you can hear in the voice of the elder son, even though it's not spelled out this way, it's not fair. It's not fair. He's getting what I always wanted, and he deserves at least. I have been here, I have worked, I have obeyed, and it's not fair. If we demand fairness, we'll always, always be disappointed. Always. We cannot make things fair. It just won't happen. Until we realize, and this, the father opens up his elder son's eyes. What are you waiting for? The fatted calf was yours all along. Everything that I have is yours. Do you remember? I divided everything I had between your brother and you. This belongs to you. You want the fatted calf? It's yours. But you have withheld yourself. You've stood on the outside, been wrapped up with bitterness and anger, demanding things be fair, been demanding that your obedience be recognized. Well, I think it's obvious. I don't know. Unless we have totally given in to bitterness and anger, I think we all want to be. I, We all want to receive the Father's grace, do we not? Do we? How could we ever refuse something like that? Some of us, you know, all we have to do is come back home. The Father's grace will meet us. Others of us have to just enter in and enjoy it instead of withholding it. Incredible story. I would encourage you to read it. Read it more than once. Read it more than twice. Let it really impact your life. Because I think when we finally experience God's grace, that we don't earn it by being good, we don't even earn it by being obedient, we don't earn it by being exemplary, and we certainly don't earn it by being bad, because it is God's gift to us, if we will just but receive it. And when we truly receive it, it changes our life. You know, I think what we're afraid of, you know, if God's grace is that good, if God's grace is really that amazing, aren't we just going to, you know, aren't people just going to take it and just, like, waste it again, or just going to be prodigal with it again? They just, you know, all that goodness, they're just going to waste it again? Like, you know, and that's a possibility. That's a possibility. But I would dare say that you haven't experienced God's grace if that is your response to grace. You haven't really received it. Because when you receive God's grace, it changes you. Quick reference back to the story in John chapter 8. Jesus' response to the woman taken in adultery. Neither do I condemn you, the one who should be condemned, the one who was taken in the very act of adultery. Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. I don't know a perfect way to administer God's grace. Sometimes we don't want to enable sin, right? We don't want to be irresponsible. We don't want to be prodigal. We don't want to waste God's grace on people that are undeserving of it, right? I don't know how to administer God's grace in a perfect manner. I don't. I'm still learning this. But I think when we realize that all of this is ours as well, and there's no limit to it, how much more can we share it with other people? I'm still learning this. It's not like just watch me and you'll see it perfectly demonstrated. It's not going to happen. But I hope that we can catch a piece of this. And, you know, if you were the younger son, who do you want to go home to? You want to go home to your big brother? You want to go home to the elder brother? It's not the one he chose to go see, right? He went to go see the Father. That's who we want. And why don't we be that Father? Why don't we be the one who is gracious and generous and forgiving and compassionate? It's our story today. If it hasn't impacted you, it can, it will. Read it, reread it, reread it again. And just let it begin the process.